Welcome back to hour number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. And before we bring on our new guest, the Pac-12, shockingly, has postponed its season following the Big Ten. So that's out there. We will see what happens with the other three Power Five conferences. But once again, the Pac-12 following the Big Ten's lead, they are not going to play this fall. Pleased to be joined by Rob Lewis of BallQuest.com. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing Gates hotline. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. Thanks for joining us. Your reaction to the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shutting it down for football in the fall?
I mean, I'm disappointed to hear that, to see things trending in that direction. You know, at the same time, it's hard to fault anyone that, however they decide to respond to, the concerns over the virus, but just disappointment. I mean, I hate to see that we're going down that road. I was really, really hopeful that, things would be encouraging enough to let college football happen. I mean, I'm not convinced that it won't happen here in the South, but to have, fragmented at best like it's going to be is certainly not ideal.
Do you think the SEC and ACC would go it alone in football if that's what it came down to?
I mean, as of now, Jimmy, I kind of think that they would. I mean, the ACC came out pretty strongly, I guess, yesterday and said that they were, proceeding down the path they were currently on to play football, and if anybody's going to do it, it would be the SEC. I think that we could probably all agree on that.
Well, maybe somebody can schedule Nebraska. They want to play somebody.
I've seen rumblings like that, too, with Ohio State. I tell you what, Jimmy, really – I mean, I don't think it'll happen immediately. But, I mean, don't you think this could be the – and, again, it's so complicated and complex, but I really think this might be the beginning of the end as far as the Power Five and the NCAA goes.
Could be.
Rob, what about the possibility of transfers from the schools that aren't going to play? I mean, that number is growing now, but there are some pretty prominent players in some of those Big Ten schools. Do you see
– sure, but then – But what do you do with the 85 rule? I mean, that's another example where the NCAA's, interest or policies wouldn't align with the members of the Power Five who may go ahead and play. I mean, that's just a whole, that's a whole other backwater. Does the SEC just get together on its own? It's just a 95 for 1 year or for this recruiting cycle. And you see a mass exodus for the Big Ten and the Pac-12. I mean, I'm sure there are a ton of kids who will be interested, but there's not enough room there's not close to enough room for everybody that wants to leave that conference if they, to play the SEC or ACC, if you're talking about the scholarship members.
Well, and that's one of the things that James Franklin was talking about, and he's like, well, until we get answers on what we can tell these kids and their parents – like, let's hold off on making this decision so we don't just say, we don't know, we'll tell you later, and how those things work, including the spring. How could that work? Don't you think a lot of those kids will just simply choose not to play, at least the ones with NFL aspirations?
Oh, 100%. If you're a rock-solid, NFL prospect who's pretty certain you're going to be drafted, that's no way you're going to play in the spring because of injury concerns and not be able to work out for teams. If everything is back to normal in 6 to 8 months and you're talking about having the draft in the spring like you normally do, why is Justin Fields going to put himself and his winning lottery ticket at risk? That something may happen to him like happened to Tua this last year. I mean, if I'm a kid in that position, there's no way I'm playing football. And then furthermore, forget about the NFL guys, the seniors or the juniors who leave early. You're gonna ask kids to play basically 24 college football games in what, 10 months?
Yep.
If you're coming back and playing again next fall, I don't think that's an answer.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I would be surprised. Well, I do want to ask you this. As far as saying several players would likely opt out and so forth, were you surprised that Trey Smith indicated to ESPN that he would want to play, that it's worth the risk?
No, I'm not surprised, Jimmy. Haven't been around that kid. But, I mean, I don't know if his feeling would be different this spring. Did he actually say that he would play in the spring?
No, he was talking about the fall.
Okay, that's what I thought. Think. That's what I thought. I read the article, and unless I misremembered, I thought he was just talking about playing, was on the bandwagon for playing right now. But I bet you he might feel differently if he's a first-round draft prospect in the spring.
Yeah. I just thought with his blood clot issues, I wasn't sure he would come back to play. I know he's got a lot to prove, but anyway, good for Tennessee if he is able to come back. I do want to ask you about a basketball player, Brandon Huntley Hatfield. He's a 6'9 power forward, rated by some of the number one power forward in the country, a native of Clarksville, Tennessee, played at IMG Academy. Now he's headed to Scotland Academy in Pennsylvania. What do you know about Huntley Hatfield?
Really good player. Played with Jaden Springer this past year at IMG, as you mentioned. Plays with Bobby Mays' AAU team, so played with Springer in that program as well. Has played with Catholics, B.J. Edwards, and a guy at Tennessee is recruiting aggressively. A lot of people think that Kentucky is the team to beat. He's cousins with Alex Portress. He played there several years ago. He was also from Clarksville. Huntley has never come out and said anything along those lines. Kentucky is the firm leader. I think a lot of people are going to be involved. He's a top five national prospect, a McDonald's All-American type kid. He's not this good, but I'm saying he's a player in the mold of someone like Kevin Durant. I'm not trying to hype him up and say he's that good right now, but he's a 6'10 guy that handles the ball, can play on the perimeter, shoots it well, has a really good mid-range game, and he's 2022 class right now. Mm-hmm. There has been some noise that he may reclassify into 2021. It's getting kind of late in the game if he's going to do that, and as you mentioned, he already has transferred prep schools, and it looks like he's headed to Pennsylvania. Now, again, it's not saying that he couldn't change his mind, and if he did, that would be another top 10 prospect that Tennessee was in on this class. Right now, I mean, I would throw Tennessee in there with Auburn, probably North Carolina. But if he stays in the 2022 class, Jimmy, he's going to have everybody after him. He is a really, really good player, very polished, very skilled.
Yeah, and so how many years was he at IMG Academy after Clarksville? Was he there 1 year or more? Do you know?
He was there just last year, I believe. I could be mistaken on that, but I think he just went there his sophomore year.
Yeah, and Tennessee's right in the thick of it. Boy, that would be fantastic if Tennessee was able to land that guy.
Yeah, he is a really good player. Rivals, we have him ranked number 5 in the country, and he's certainly got he won't get the number 1 in that class because of Amone Bates, who's one of the best prospects he's come down the pike in a long time. But I can see him going up even another couple spots. He's just that. You just don't see that many kids his size with that kind of skill.
Rob, any other decisions that are known around the corner for any of those other Tennessee targets in basketball?
You continue to pick up all these rumors that Kennedy Chandler, the point guard prospect in Memphis, he's the 10th ranked player in the country, the top rated point guard. There's a lot of smoke out there because he's on the verge of pulling the trigger to Tennessee. Both Kennedy and his father, in talking with some of our rivals, national recruiting analysts, have denied that, indicating that they're waiting to see, hoping that that period on recruiting gets lifted, hoping they can take some visits. I kind of have to take their comments at face value and believe that they're not on the verge of doing something. With that said, it does very much feel like Tennessee is in the driver's seat right there, despite him, and he's got Kentucky, he's got Duke, he's got North Carolina, and hometown Memphis in there in his top 5. But it really feels like Tennessee's the clear-cut leader right now for Chandler. But I don't have any firm indication that he's on the verge of pulling the trigger.
What do you think about the college basketball season? Do you think that we're headed down a similar path of last-minute drama on scheduling, conference only, whether to have seasons, who shuts down? Do you think this is going to transfer into the college basketball season as well?
Yeah, I think the uncertainty is going to linger. Now, hopefully we know quite a bit more, and hopefully things are are trending in a different direction by the time November rolls around. But my personal opinion has been that they would, assuming they'll watch what football does. But I think it's a little bit of a different animal because you're talking about being inside, which by all accounts is more of an at-risk situation. And also, you've got a lot more travel involved when you're talking about basketball and the number of games. My initial inclination was that they would hold off and do maybe a conference-only deal starting after the new year. But, I've talked to some people around Tennessee's program, and they seem optimistic that things are that the schedule, not necessarily fans in the stands and all that, but they seem optimistic that the schedule is going to go off as planned. I'm a little skeptical myself, but people that are closer to the situation than I am are optimistic.
Our guest Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com. When we come back, we'll get his take on Tennessee's additional two football opponents that the SEC announced on Friday evening. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the sports animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrara. Our guest is Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com. Rob, I do want to ask you about this. Tennessee will be playing Auburn and Texas A&M. Your thoughts on those two opponents added to Tennessee's schedule?
Oh, wow, Jimmy. First off, it's a tough draw for Tennessee. Neither one of those teams are probably top 10 caliber, but I think they're certainly top 20 teams. Both of them bring back experience at quarterback in Bo Nix and Kellen Mond. I'm doing some reading up on them over the weekend. I think they both have big question marks with their offensive lines. That's probably something in Tennessee's favor, looking back what they do on defense. And, A&M was really young last year. I think they'll be a lot better. I think they had six or seven freshmen that started. But, to me, the bigger story with that, as Tennessee got, was who LSU, Alabama, and Georgia got. It really looked like a farce with what the SEC did. Given Alabama, Kentucky, and Missouri, LSU got Missouri and Vanderbilt, and Georgia got Mississippi State and Arkansas. I mean, they got all patsies. Tennessee, they're not playing a top 10 or top 5 team. They didn't get a patsy. And there are, a lot of other programs in the SEC, I'm sure, that were upset about it. If I was Jeremy Pruitt, I would be absolutely furious. Now, I think it's going to end up probably not mattering with what we've seen from the Big Ten to the Pac-12. I think only a fool would suggest that the SEC didn't try to rig it so that their best teams had the sweetest pass to a playoff. If there was one, now who knows what you do in that situation? You only have two or three major conferences played. But I thought it was really comical that it seemed so transparent that they were trying to bolster the chance that they could get two teams into the playoff and get more money in the conference.
Let's go to the phones where Alan is our next caller. Alan, you're on with Rob Lewis.
Hey, guys. I feel like singing the theme to Hee-Haw, Gloom, Despair, and Agony. You guys talked about it a little. I want to comment on medical experts in a second, but would you all put any odds on SEC, ACC playing, and the others not, regardless of the Big 12, I guess?
Gosh, got a statistician asking me a percentage question. My goodness. I don't know. I guess if the other three conferences say no, do I think the SEC and ACC would go alone? I think it's possible. I don't know how to put a percentage on it. How about less than 50%? Is that good enough?
That's good enough. Well, it would be, I predicted all along that we weren't going to play or we'd start and not finish, but not that I didn't want us to. But it would be interesting to have a couple of conferences give it a go just from a learning standpoint, assuming you could reasonably say you weren't putting people at risk, which I think you probably can, even though I'm going to disagree with the ACC medical expert here in a second, but at least we learned something. I hope if everything gets canceled to the spring, I hope we do, you know, they get to practice some in the fall, maybe scrimmage, try some things out, you know, just to learn. Because I don't think, you know, we're not going to, unless we get a vaccine, we're not going to be a whole lot better in the spring. And so if we haven't learned anything or whatever, you know, who knows. But anyway, my comment on medical experts, I wouldn't be telling you anything you didn't know that if I said you can always find an expert on both sides of an issue, right? Mm-hmm. Go in any courtroom or whatever. And I will say this, doctors are about the least scientific people I know. They study a lot of science, but they don't study necessarily the scientific method of forming hypotheses and analyzing data. But anyway, here's what the guy said. We believe we can mitigate risk down to a level that makes everyone safe. So we believe it. He didn't offer any reasoning or whatever. Will it be tough? Yes. Expensive and hard and lots of work, for sure. And I think that's probably the issue, is you're going to go to a lot of expense, a lot of hard work, and you've got probably very, you know, low probability of success. But this part got me. I do believe you can mitigate risk that will bring the level down that's no different than living as a student on campus. Now, so I got a student and I got a student athlete. The student part theoretically does all the same things. The athlete goes out on a field and butts head with other students, and then once a week goes out on a field and butts heads with other students from other schools, and somehow that's not riskier than just being a student. That, you know, I can think of some ways they could justify that. They would have to treat the athletes very special. For instance, they're probably going to give athletes more testing than students, which probably brings up an interesting discussion. You know, we know pro athletes do that, and their argument is they're paying a company more money than the medical system would pay them to do tests that they wouldn't do otherwise. So we're not taking tests away from anyone else. But I don't know if that's true or not. Let's say it is. But, you know, if you say we're going to make tests available to our athletes but not to our students, I wonder if those weren't some of the discussions the Big Ten presidents had to have about how this whole dang thing would work. It is complicated, and I think there was a caller on Eric's show, must be a regular caller, I forgot his name, maybe Terry, Big Ten fan. But he said, you know, these are tough decisions. Let's don't dog them too bad, regardless of what way they go. And I guess I'd have to probably agree with that. So anyway, I just rambled. So I don't know if you got any comments.
Alan, I mean, you bring up a point that, or at least touched on a point that I think is my biggest kind of issue with the whole all this cancellation stuff. You know, how are college presidents justifying bringing back tens of thousands of students to campus and having them live in dorm rooms and be around each other, but you can't play a football game even if you don't have anybody in the stands? That to me is just it's the incongruity there is indefensible. And I mean, I just moved a freshman into the dorms on campus this week, and I don't have a lot of concerns about him, you know, his vulnerability. And like Alan said, I wouldn't have a lot of concerns about the athletes that we're talking about canceling their season.
Alan, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Well, there's a lot that the caller touched on. So go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say that to me is my biggest issue with the whole thing. How are universities justifying bringing tens of thousands of students back, but it's too dangerous? You know, that's not too dangerous to have them all living, you know, on top of each other, you know, multi-story dorm rooms, walking crowded hallways. You know, cafeterias are open, but you can't play a football game. That to me reeks of universities realizing that if they don't do that, that the financial impact from not having, you know, people paying room and board would be crippling.
I do agree with that, Rob, and I certainly want football also. The one thing I would say to that is if for you to have the football games, you're now going to have much more than just the players, right? You're going to have staff. You're going to have, you know, if you do try to have limited fans in the stands, now you have, you know, older staff there that work there, the events.
Just, just as you do to run a campus. Physical plant, janitorial, custodial services, professors,
that's
cafeteria workers.
Fair
I mean,
point.
It's no different. Yep. University yep. police.
No. Absolutely. No, that's a fair point. And, you know, the caller also mentioned the fact that, you know, there would be the variation of, you know, different medical experts. So, you know, obviously there is going to be different ones. Doctors aren't absolutes, so they don't tell anyone absolutes. They always kind of leave the window open, and they don't say this is going to do 100%. They always kind of leave that window open. So that's not their nature. So the medical experts we hear. That's why they don't take a hard line stance, because you just don't know, especially with something brand new. Real quick, Rob, I want to get your reaction to this, because I just read the Pac-12's release, and in that, in the title, and they just say it in, the Pac-12 conference postpones all sport competitions through the end of the calendar year. They're not saying fall sports like the Big Ten did. It's all sport competitions, which would include basketball. What's your reaction to that? Because the basketball season.
I mean, I'm surprised that they pulled the trigger. I'm surprised they pulled the trigger on that this far in front of the season started. You know, almost 3 months. I think that's hasty. I think that's an overreaction, and it automatically just throws everything else when you're talking about the NCAA basketball into, you know, just kind of turmoil. I mean, so what? If other leagues don't follow suit, what does that do to the NCAA tournament? How do you look at a Pac-12 team and judge their resume if they have no non-conference schedule? If they only play in conference, they only play, you know, 18 to 20 games. It's that really surprises me that they jumped the gun and did that so early.
I just saw where the Big Ten has postponed all fall sports and will only play conference games when they resume in January. That's out there right now. So Pac-12 joins the Big Ten in postponing all fall sports.
The Pac-12 release says all sport competitions through the end of the calendar year. It doesn't say fall sports.
Well, but I'm saying that I just read a story that said the Big Ten is playing conference games only starting in January.
Okay, gotcha.
So, anyway, that's I can't verify that story, but I just read it, so who knows? Goodness. All right.
Way too early to be making that kind of call.
I agree completely. Hey, Rob, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it, and have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Rob Lewis, BallQuest.com.